You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 83 of FPL Black Box. My name is Az, and I'm joined by the returning Mark Suddens. How are you feeling, Mark?
Good evening. I am tip top. I'm feeling great, and I can feel myself getting back into FPL mode, which is great. I was struggling during the international break, I've got to say, for motivation, but now seeing your rosy face, I'm feeling a lot better. I'm ready to engage again.
Rosy face. Okay. I've actually got a proper beer this time rather than
an
non-alcoholic one. So yeah. Cheers. Yeah. Hi everyone. We're back. I did a stream earlier with Janny where I forgot how to do literally everything, press any buttons or, you know, talk sense. So I've had a bit of a kind of a prep into this. So we'll kind of see.
Now you tell me. You didn't say that before we went on there.
Yeah, I know. God, yeah. Well, at the moment it looks all right. The sound's working and no complaints. So I think fingers crossed we're all good. We've got a lot to talk about today because obviously you haven't been around for ages, and you know there's lots of new things going on and lots of big games this weekend. But most importantly, I'm going to get to talk about Brighton's new manager, which I'm really excited about.
Blimey.
Really excited about.
Fair enough. You had to listen to my Cooper nonsense before the start of the season, so I guess that's fair enough. Yeah. Go on then. I'm ready. Spoilers. For it. I'm ready.
Spoilers. He is amazing. I'm so excited.
On paper or in reality? On paper, he looks great.
As a man and a manager, right. He looks a fantastic appointment. So I'm really excited. But yeah, we'll get into that as we go. Before we do that, let's have a word from our sponsor, which is NordVPN. They're sponsoring this video. Thank you so much to them. For anyone who isn't aware of who NordVPN are, they are a way to protect yourself online and also watch shows like Mark does from different countries that might not be
Colombo for the win.
are you plowing through Colombo?
Yeah, I've seen them all 12 times each episode, but that doesn't stop me rewatching them. I'm loving it.
Are you doing? You're doing your Colombo sleepovers? That's what you're doing last
night. Not yet. At Christmas, we have that every Christmas.
At Christmas,
yeah. Okay. Three of my mates come over and we do that. Look, don't knock it till you tried it.
No. Hey, I'm not saying anything. So NordVPN is the fastest VPN out there. It's basically the best VPN you can buy. They sponsor these videos, a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you're not happy with it, you get 100% refund. Three different types of packages. You've got the standard, which is your VPN, your malware protection, the click of a button, and an ad blocker. You've got your plus, which gives you a password manager as well, which is literally a godsend. The password manager that I've got has basically completely changed my life. And I'm trying to convince my dad to get it, but he still insists on his little book in his safe with all the
oh my word down. Has he got a little black book with them all written down?
Come on they are getting a bit better. They're using more secure passwords, but I still really want them to use a password manager because it would be it'll be a lot better. Then you've got the complete. And when I say complete, I mean, that gives you everything that you got before. And you're looking at like £4 a month, something like that. And that gives you a terabyte of encrypted cloud storage as well. So if you've got sensitive photos or documents, like my Mark Southern's blackmail folder of all the terrible WhatsApps he sent me over the years, which I will unveil when you wrong me.
I need to hack you and delete that immediately.
You won't be able to because I've got my encrypted storage. But do give NordVPN a go. Obviously, internet security is incredibly important, and protecting yourself from phishing and cyber attacks, especially if you're using public Wi-Fi as well. Don't use public Wi-Fi without using a VPN. And if you just use our code, which is in the description as well, you get 4 months completely free on top of all the other stuff that we talked about. So give it a go. Give NordVPN a go. We're both using it. I think it's great. It just hasn't slowed my connection down at all. I feel really safe. So it's really nice.
Can you turn me up, Az? Because a few people are saying again that my volume is too low.
Can I
so,
turn you up?
You know,
yes, I can.
Make sure you turn me up and not yourself up.
I know. There you go. You're up plus three now. So
beautiful. I hope that's better for everybody because it's important you hear me because I'm going to balance out this pro Brighton chat that's going to happen later.
Hey, we haven't taken your manager, so you should be grateful.
No, I am better. Yeah, yeah.
That we've gone for deserving.
No, I'm pleased about that. Yep. Much better, says everybody. Let's go, Az. Let's kick
it
off.
There we go. Beautiful. Let's go. Right. So let's go into game week, whatever it was, 7, 8. What are we now going into? Nine? Game 8.
Yeah.
It was so long ago. Got my team up first.
Yeah.
I had Henderson in goal with 2. Diaz and Trippier with 6 and 5. And Emerson got 1 point. I think he played about 3 minutes. Pereira with 1. Madison, my boy, came in. Look at that. Straight away. Yeah. 7 points. We talk about Leicester quite a lot, actually. They're very interesting. Marcelo with 3 and Foden scored as well with 8. Harden with 6. Kane captain with 20. And Mitrovic 2. 61 points. I was pretty happy with that, but then lots of the other highly owned players all did well as well. So it ended up being fairly average, but I got a green arrow, so can't really complain.
I think I mean, it's better than average. The average was 50, right? I mean, you're obviously comparing yourself to the company that we keep amongst the community. And yeah, it was an okay score, whereas when you get to mine, it's a bad score. But yeah, I mean, like no big stars. I mean, you got the captaincy right with Kane, right? And he could have had more, couldn't he? He could have had more.
It's always frustrating when a team scores that many goals and you've got what I thought was the best player from that team, given that I didn't think Son was going to play. Congrats if anyone held on to him and then kept him. Do you know he's 2 points behind Salah?
Yeah.
If only
someone. I said, didn't I? I said like, yeah, we'll see after 6 or 7 weeks where Son and Salah are. And it looked like Salah was going to destroy him, but no, clearly not, you know, 2 points in it. And as I said to you, Son doesn't even have to match Salah because the £1 million difference. So if he gets close to him, I would have won. But obviously, I've bottled it since then and got Salah in, then got him out again and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, enough about my travails. But yeah, I mean, I think you got, I mean, Madison and Foden, right, delivered for you. That was the big plus, isn't it? When you get those, when the mid-price midfielders deliver for you, because it's been hard to nail those mid-price midfielders this season. Mm. I think we started the season thinking you had to have one or two. Diaz was in the mix, you know, Saka, of course. Zaha has come through, and then we're going to talk about a few more tonight, but Madison's definitely in the mix and he's the kind of fan favourite at the moment, isn't he? And you got on him early. You always love Madison and your boy delivered. And then Foden, you've always swelled by him as well. And, you know, he came out of it outscoring Haaland. So, yeah, that made the difference for you, didn't it?
It did, yeah. Kind of just went back to some of the players that have done quite well for me in the past. I mean, Foden has frustrated me previously, but when Grealish is in the side and Foden hasn't got a hug that left-hand side, I just think he is a great option because he can drift around, he goes more central, he has, you know, good chances, good opportunities, he's got amazing players feeding him and he can feed amazing players. It's just when Grealish doesn't play and he's there for the balance with Cancelo still tucking in that he tends to drift out a bit wide and that's not really when you want to see him. But he was poor for England he was okay in the first game, wasn't he? But one of our better players, but still not really clicking for England. And then he was off the pitch, wasn't he, when we started our comeback against Germany. So hasn't been the best international break for him, but hasn't been the best international break for a lot of players. Madison wasn't even the squad. Tony didn't play. Trent was, you know, ousted. Strange one.
Yeah. And I guess the issue you've got is game week 12 with your City players, and Foden's probably, I presume, going to go soon with that in mind. So, you know, he's probably only a short-term option for you, but, you know, we'll talk about that a bit later, I'm sure.
We shall indeed. Your game week then, you got 51 points.
Yeah, pretty rubbish again. You know, I got the captaincy right, went with Kane. I didn't have Haaland, so I didn't have any choice. I guess that's the difference, right? I didn't have Haaland. Had De Bruyne, he outscored Haaland as it was, got the 10 points, did well again. But Bowen didn't deliver, Gibbs-White didn't deliver, Tony didn't deliver, and they along with Perisic were my players that I was looking for to make the difference. So, you know, those four players, Perisic, Gibbs-White, Tony, Bowen, were the kind of players that not every team had, and I needed at least one of them to come in, and they didn't. So that was the difference between my team and yours. My midfielders didn't come in at all, apart from De Bruyne. And De Bruyne was just covering Haaland, really, wasn't he? So, yeah, I don't look at my team going forward. I've made a couple of changes over the break. I made changes early. I'll talk about that at the end of the show, but I look at my team and I'm happy where it is now. So, I in a way, like, you know, 5.4 million rank, but in a way it gives me a lot of freedom in my thinking. And it's like, I've got so little to lose being ranked where I am, in that I can play the wild card now. I can make some hits, be a bit aggressive, take some risks where I feel they're warranted, and play a bit off the cuff, because at 5 million in the world, why not? Why wouldn't I do that? You know, I've got nothing to protect and everything to go for. So, I'm going into this next period thinking, let's just get some strings and green arrows together and see where it takes me. I'm under no pressure because of where I am, and no one's shooting at me. I'm not getting a load of flack for it, although perhaps I deserve it. But
Well, there is. No, I'm just. There is one person giving you a bit of flack.
It was that Gianni, is it? Is that...
it's my dad I messaged you about.
This is a man who keeps his passwords in a black book.
Well, I went on a walk with him the other day, and he wanted me to pass on to you. He just wanted me to tell you that not having Haaland is absolutely ridiculous. Mm. And it's all very well trying to be clever, but you've got to make sure you've got the basics covered. That's what he wanted me to tell you.
Yeah. And you know what? You know, I could take stick on Twitter. I could take that. But when your dad is having a go, that does hurt, right? That does actually have an impact. And you can tell him that Delia agrees with Mr. Phillips. Thanks, Delia, for backing me up. You could tell your dad that, well, I told you, Haaland's installed in my team now. He's part of the two transfers.
He was happy with that.
But, you know, I was right to go Kane over Haaland this week. You know, it worked out. And De Bruyne did his thing. He outscored Haaland. So those two did their job. It's just everywhere else in my team, look at it, no returns anywhere other than the trippy assist. So, you know, it wasn't the decision not to have Haaland that hurt me. It was the fact that, you know, my other supporting cast didn't come in.
Not this week, but it has.
No,
Just a bit.
I'm not doing a full retro on those weeks. They're gone now. Let's move on.
It's going to be a short retro, isn't it, next season when we both just like, well, we never started with Haaland. That's probably an error.
Yeah.
Excellent. Great and the good. Next, thank you to Greyhead, as always, for these. I don't really know how to take this. I mean, we are third from bottom, me and bottom you. Savanish Singh is our filling in the shit sound that is our season. There's no other way to describe it.
Sorry, Savanish. You don't want to be the filling in that kind of sandwich, but yeah, you have to take it for now.
What is interesting is Gray has calculated the captain scores of everyone. I don't know if he says, I've got the best captain score of everyone in Great and the Good somehow. And you've got the worst.
Yeah. Well, at least I've got stuff to improve on, right? At least I can look at that and go, oh, okay, well, that's an area. Whereas you've got no excuse. Where are you going to go with that? So, yeah, and it's interesting as well. Look at my captains. I've moved it around, right? You know, KDB, Son, Haaland. You know, I'm the only one to have captained Son at any point, but I didn't captain Son in the week he got his hat trick. And that's my season, right? Son got his hat trick last weekend against Leicester. He didn't get it against Southampton at home. He could have got it against Southampton at home, but he didn't. He got an assist and that was all. I've just been, you know, I've missed the target with my captain picks, right? It's one of those things. I don't think any of those players, KDB, Son and Haaland, are bad captains. I've just chosen to move it around and missed the points. It's just been unfortunate, I guess. Whereas you look at everybody else and they've been very consistent, haven't they, with their captains? Only two players, Haaland or Salah. Which, dull, do I say it? But, you know, effective.
I mean,
effective.
Yeah, I mean, it does tend to happen most seasons, doesn't it? We tend to get two or three players max who people are going to captain most weeks because it's that kind of consist. That's what you pay for. You pay for that kind of consistency. I'd be more surprised if we saw like some Madisons and some Bowens and stuff in there. So it's not that surprising. But I mean, I don't really understand how I had quite a good captain run last season as well. So I've kind of carried that on this year. It's just all my other players that seem to be letting me down week on week. So yeah, a bit of a shame, but yeah, early days. We'll kind of see where it goes. But shout out to FPL Harry, right at the top, 78K in the world. Oh no, sorry, 33K in the world. Quite a way ahead of like Ben Quillen and Finn and Magnus. Magnus, what a couple of weeks he's had. Been following the chess scandals?
I have, and my anal beads are fitted nicely for tonight later on. So, don't go buzzing them. It's
something I never thought I'd hear Mark Southern say.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping for a sponsor of that now we've done Manscaped. Should we get that in as well?
That's going
to
get clipped.
No, what a palaver, though. My word. We thought FBL had beef. My God, Plonka needs to get on the chess scene, doesn't he? My word.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. What can you say? I mean, Magnus at the center of it. You know, I've been DMing him, obviously, and he's been telling me all about it, you know. But I mean, you know, maybe he's got more time to concentrate on FBL. Good wild card. He had Son, didn't he? So landed that. So good luck to him. But, you know, if he does want to retire from the chess world, we'll welcome him over with open arms. So, yeah.
I mean, it's impressive. I mean, he went up 800,000 places this week off the back of that wild card. We went up 700. Well, I went up 700,000. Sorry, you went up 100,000. Even you may agree, but to go up 800,000 into, you know, from a million to 200,000, just again, it just shows, isn't it? I mean, 80 points he got. I'm 17 points behind General.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at Harry, I'm only 78 points behind Harry.
Yeah.
But that's achievable.
Yeah, it's
doable.
It is. I think what's heartening at the moment as well is our teams are beginning to kind of, it's a little bit of difference opening up in the teams. You know, I watched the scout cast last night and, you know, the three guys there had very different players now for the first time ever. Mm. And I think that gives me heart as someone who struggled this season for points and rank that, you know, I should have a few players different to everybody else now. And, you know, it's going to come down to output, right? And getting those picks right. And we've got to back ourselves to do that and make up some ground. So I think, you know, when it's like everyone's got the same players, those 9 or 10 players in the template are dominating things. It's quite disheartening to fall behind because then you think, how can I make up ground? But when you see that, you know, people selling Alexander Arnold, for example, you know, and people going back to Salah and people going for Madison over Bowen or Zaha over Foden or whatever, you know, there's some real difference makers now in people's teams. And that gives me hope that, you know, I could, if I hit some targets, make up some ground. Same for you.
I think with this Arsenal and City blank and with Liverpool with tough fixtures and off form, it's just shaking things up amazingly because people are going loads of different ways now. And, you know, we've got Potter coming into Chelsea who should invigorate some of their assets. And I don't know, it's just, it feels like, I feel the buzz again, you know. I've struggled a bit at the start of this season, but I feel that kind of, you know, I sold Jesus for Kane, for example, and it didn't feel great, but it was kind of exciting because, you know, I watched that game and then I was watching the Brentford game and Jesus scored early and I thought, oh no, of course he's still a good option. But I don't know, I kind of feel excited and rejuvenated by things. So, yeah,
and also when Son got the hat trick, it's like, I looked at it, it was bittersweet for me. So I was like, why couldn't you have done that when I backed you? But I look at it and think, okay, now, you know, I mean, I always thought he was a credible option anyway, but we were getting turned off from him because he was clearly struggling for some reason.
Yeah.
Got goals for South Korea over the break as well. Surely he'll kick on now and he's going to become a real credible option for that second or even third heavy hitter, depending on how we're setting up. So he's going to be a difference maker because when we look ahead to the fixtures, there's, you know, it's game week 11, I think, where Spurs have got Everton at home. And, you know, if you've got a Spurs player, you're going to consider him for captaincy because Haaland's at Liverpool. So, you know, I it's nice. Well, I see some ingredients now that make me feel positive about potential to catch up and make some ground.
Yep. Right. You ready?
Yeah. Go.
Good. Okay. So, speaking of excitement and fun and things to rejuvenate me, I'm now going to do a segment on Brighton.
Oh, is it this? Oh, I thought you'd leave it till later. Okay.
And Brighton's a new manager.
Hold on. Yeah, use of exclamation marks in titles. When did I miss that meeting? When did I okay that?
I'm so excited. Okay. I genuinely am really, really excited. Do you think he looks a bit like me?
No, he looks like Robert Downey Jr., doesn't he? That's what he looks like to me. But you
well, know, I have often been told that I look a little bit like Robert Downey.
Well, okay, anyway, carry on.
If you aren't interested in Brighton, you might want to turn off and do something else. I have been asked.
Hold on, we've gone down to 400 from 1,000 there.
I bet. Like that. But you know, it is relevant. People still have Brighton players in this side, which they bought earlier. There was a lot of worry when Potter left. The fixtures are really bad, as we talk about. And so I've been reading up a lot about De Zerbi, who I had knew absolutely nothing about. I'm going to be honest. When we signed him, I knew nothing about him. I was looking at some of the other, you know, Knutsen, for example, who's at Bodo Glimt. I was looking at him and thinking he would be a good option. And then there was no other interviews that it was, you know, Bloom wanted De Zerbi. He was first choice and he's come straight in. So just going to give a bit of a background about who he is and kind of what we can expect from Brighton. So he did an interview for Brighton recently, a great interview. He speaks a little bit of English, enough to get through a kind of interview, but he'd obviously like pre-kind of planned it. This is what he said. He said, "My idea to Potter is not the same, but things are similar. For my football ideas, I love attack. I love to attack with many players. It's important, the defensive phases, but I love attack." Says it three times in one sentence. "If I decide to attack or defend, in my idea, normally it is always better to attack." He said the word attack, I think, five times in the space of about 20 seconds. He's a very, very, very attacking manager who likes to play on the front foot. Mm. Vincenzo Maradona has said the fundamental principle of De Zerbi's football is that he wants his team to dominate the game by constructing the game from the back and keeping the ball on the ground. Sassuolo played the most passes in the league. I've got some charts on that as well. The fewest long balls, and I think the third fewest crosses as well, in a very ambitious style of play. He plays with five or six men attacking. The left back and the right back joins in. More about them in a sec. The idea is to fill the half of the opponent with as many players as possible. So he is going, this is a guy who is going to get the most out of our attacking assets. He has set, so he was in the Ukraine. He was at Sassuolo for two seasons. They finished eighth twice. They scored 69 and 64 goals across those games. Brighton have not scored more than 40 goals in a season since being promoted. They had no budget whatsoever as well. They're a bit like Bournemouth. And they missed out on European football on goal difference, as we'll kind of see in a second as well. I know some fans of Italian football, and they said that when he was at Sassuolo, the top teams were afraid to go there because they would be dominated. The passing and the possession, one of the best possessive sides in Serie A, maybe even the best, and teams wouldn't enjoy kind of going there. So, yeah, very, very attacking, very possession-based, and actually looks like an evolution on Potter kind of going forward.
Steady. I mean, yeah, a couple of things. Like, first of all, like when Brighton appoint a manager, they're not appointing a manager without having done their homework, right? They would probably they would have been prepared for this, right? Because they, like us, would have known that Potter's going to be sought after and it's only be a matter of time either England came knocking or somebody else. I was quite surprised Chelsea moved for him, but, you know, fair enough. Mm. So you know that when they go and get a manager, it's going to be an option they've researched and it'll be right for them, perfect fit, right? No doubt. So you're right to be excited on that score in that he's going to be a good option. Whether his brand of football translates directly to immediate FBL returns, I think you're probably jumping several guns, but we'll have to see, right? We'll have to see. I think the what you've described there, are getting as many, you know, fullbacks up high, getting as many players in the opponent's half. Yeah, you know, Cooper tries that and it hasn't really worked for us. So, you know, let's see how he implements his plan on a Premier League stage, which is the toughest stage in the world of football, isn't it? So, well, you know,
what's going to be very interesting is the formation. So, as I said, he mostly, I think it might even be my next screen. Nope, it's not. Hang on, let me find the screen. This one. So this is how to swallow setup. So it's either a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1. That's kind of just typically what he uses. Mm. He's been quoted as saying, I never start with a formation. I don't have a favourite system that I like or don't like. I put players in their best positions, keeping the same principles.
Well, that's not Potter, is it?
No, exactly.
He moves players around as he to fit his tactical systems, right? So, okay.
But what is going to be very interesting about that is Brighton's squad is very much set up for three at the back and wing-backs because we don't really have full-backs. No. I mean, we've got Estupiñán and Lamptey. I mean, if he goes with those two and like Webster and Dunk, I mean, talk about being open. We're going to get absolutely kind of cleaved apart. So I think he might have to start with five at the back and kind of work from that, because that just seems to be how our team is set up. But it will be interesting to know if he sees something in those talks. If he doesn't go that, I mean, he could use Veltman at right back potentially. But you know, so, March I think will play further up the pitch. Interesting.
Let's cut to the chase, because Delia says this. So are we keeping Brighton assets? You've got Gross and Estupiñán. You're keeping Gross, I take it, because you're going to wait and see what role he plays. Trossard's got to be the joker, though. He's got to be the one, isn't he, Trossard? Because I always look at Trossard and think there's a better FBL asset in there than we've even seen to this point. Like, he has got the potential, I think, to jump to that 8-9 million bracket with his output, and he's not quite done it with Potter, but this could be the guy to unlock that. Do you acknowledge that? Do you see that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think March is interesting as well, if he gets that kind of right wing spot now down. But Trossard is the best player in our team, and I think De Zerbi's going to know that. I think Gross is really interesting, though, because De Zerbi was a number 10 back in his playing days, and he never felt he was in a side that could unlock his potential, because no one played with a number 10, so he was kind of like cast under. If you look at the way Sassuolo, Sassuolo's set up, that number 10, that AM, is so key to unlocking everything. And he's got the perfect one in Gross, because he's fantastic at doing that. So I think if you've got Trossard or Gross, you keep them. Absolutely, 100%. I think if you've got Dunk, Webster, Veltman, you probably bin them off.
Sanchez? I mean, like, Sanchez has been a sound pick at 4-5, but do you think he'll have more to do, right? He's going to have more to do.
He'll have more to do. I think he's going to start doing a lot better on the bonus. Because he's going to be used in the build-up play a lot more, the short play. Basically, from what I've read and from what I've seen of Sassuolo's tactics, is very much kick the ball around as much as possible around that back line, invite the press, invite players to come into you, and then exploit the space quickly and kind of effectively. Now, Liverpool was the ultimate test in the first game, because they are the best pressers in the world. they didn't show it in the first couple of games, but I think that game has just got so many goals all over it, because Brighton are going to be trying to implement this new quick passing style, and Liverpool are going to be pressing, and there will be space for Brighton to exploit. But I think it's going to be two completely different systems going against
each other. But he's only had 2 weeks, and he's had some of his players away, so it's not going to be immediate. So he's going to take time to get his team playing how he wants to play. So
he will, but it's not a complete overhaul of tactics, because there's a lot of similarities between this kind of system and what Potter's been building, and we've got the players that can do it. The players in our team are clever, technical players on the ball. That's what Potter's been building. So I don't think it's going to be a huge, fundamental change. The training videos I've seen him are really interesting, because he's encouraging this quick play. He's really anal beads, looking at the way players turn on the ball and which feet they take the ball on and stuff. Like, it's all very technical, very intricate. So yeah, could be.
But what about the fixtures, as? Because Brighton's fixtures aren't great.
The fixtures, Mark, are absolutely awful. We can see the ticker here. This is for the next it's about 8-9 weeks.
And that game week 12 tough encounter stands out for me, right? You know.
Yeah. If only. Well, you're not coming. You're not even coming to the match anymore.
No. No, I'm going to see Pavement in Glasgow instead. So sorry about that.
Typical Mark. This is. The day before my hernia surgery. Now, I'm still going.
Well, you know, you're a soldier, aren't you? But, you know, I'm seeing Pavement, sorry.
Our fixtures are Liverpool, Spurs, Brentford, Forest, City. So, yeah, I mean, Liverpool, I think that we'll get a goal, or at least a couple of goals in that. Spurs is going to be really tough, I think, just because of how kind of organised and compact and how Conte's got them set up. But Brentford, Forest, I think we can score in those. then it's City, Chelsea. I mean, I wouldn't be buying our players for sure. But
yeah,
I think if you,
right.
If you,
well, that's what I was getting at. Would you be buying? Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a keep then, is it? Keep and wait and see how it unfolds.
Yeah. It's a keep. Yeah, I think if you've got Groves and you've got Trossard, there's no reason to be jumping off them. Just one thing before I move off this, and I will move off this in a second. Is I just want to show you this. This is teams where the possession play improved most year on year. This is from The Athletic. So Brighton in 1920, when Potter came in, were the second most improved in terms of possession. And look at that, Sassuolo first in terms of possession. So at the moment, Brighton are eighth in the league. We average about 50% possession in the game, which is good for us. But if you look at this chart, you can see here, we're expecting that to increase quite a lot under De Zerbi. Okay. I mean, in his season at Sassuolo, in terms of completed passes, no team in Serie A had more complete passes. They'd, Juventus, Napoli, Inter, and it's because of this quick, short play passing. So expect Brighton's possession to improve. Expect us to concede more goals, but I'm also expecting us to score more.
Okay. Can I just say, I expect this level of analysis when Sam Allardyce takes over from Cooper in a few weeks' time. Okay.
And you'll get it. Okay, you'll get good. It. I'll talk about all of his free kick seminars and corners. And
you know, I'm going to hold you to it.
I can't wait for Sam Allardyce to take over at Forest.
I'm joking. I hope. God, honestly, that'd be the end of me, I think, if that happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. I haven't been running the chat. I hope.
No, they've been very tolerant of that section.
Have they?
Yeah, quite frankly, I'm quite surprised. So, you know, let's move on though, shall we? No, I think it's interesting. And again, it's exciting. It's another ingredient. It's another change. You know, along with Potter at Chelsea, and will that unlock Sterling? What will it do to James, etc.? We've got a new manager at Brighton that could enhance Brighton assets. And you know, I'm all for it. Let's bring it on. Let's start seeing Trossard banging goals. Let's start seeing Gross be an even better player than he is. Let's start seeing the fullbacks be a factor for Brighton. I'm all for it. Let's do it.
Yep. I've got one more thing to say.
Oh, of course you have.
Deserving.
Yeah, go on.
not about tech, because I mentioned that he was a nice guy as well. So firstly, he was one of the few Italian voices who spoke up against the Super League. Was it last year or the year before? And he was about to play Milan, and he basically condemned Milan and said, you know, they were kind of snakes and whatever, and then beat them with Sassuolo. So I enjoyed that. He refused to leave the Ukraine when the war started until all of his international players, partners and children were evacuated.
Yeah,
he was the last player at international player there to leave. And he also was offered the job at Bologna. And they had a manager already in place who was battling leukemia at the time. And he refused the job unless he resigned. Bologna sacked him and he refused the job.
Wow. Blimey.
So there you go.
Well, fair play.
Three other reasons to respect Roberto.
Yeah. It is nice when you respect your manager as a person, isn't it? And that's why, you know, I love Cooper so much as well. So I feel it. I feel the love from you for your new manager, and I hope he delivers for you. I really do.
Me too.
But he looks nothing like you, Az. I don't know where you're getting that.
Does look nothing like me? No. I feel like I could screw my face up into it.
That's going to get cut as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is. Yeah. We mentioned anal beads twice, so it can't get any worse. No. Right. Is this the official Brighton podcast here?
I know.
That
Steve,
is it. I'm
let's
done.
Let's move on for Steve's sake.
I'm done. Yeah. I'm done now.
Sports Social, now on the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is Pedro from the Arsenal Opinion podcast, and I am hyped about the title running. Can Arsenal pit Pep and Klopp? Will our young squad be described as mentality monsters? Is Mikel Arteta truly a generational saucy manager? Come and join us on the Arsenal Opinion podcast to follow the boys on this historic 2024 Premier League title run-in and hear analysis of the games, the hottest transfer rumours, the Arsenal culture and the business of football. 3 times a week exclusively on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Search the Arsenal Opinion now and come and join the fun.
Let's look at some data then. Let's look at team data attack over the season. We've got City in first. What a surprise. XG, non-penalty per 90 of 2.03. I mean, is that the highest you've ever seen it?
Could be. I don't know. I'll need to look back on last season. But and what was getting me as well, big chance per 90. You know, look at the gap there to the rest of the field. You know, the gap from Liverpool is not that big, but the gap on big chance per 90, 4.1 compared to 2.6. Liverpool, Arsenal 2.8, you know, 4 big chances a match. when you've got Haaland in your team is a concern for the opponent, isn't it? You know, and for us, it, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, are we going off Haaland as perma captain? Well, with that kind of rate of big chance creation, you know, De Bruyne and Haaland should continue to deliver, right? You'd have to expect that. I don't know if that's going to dip. I think they can maintain this kind of level. And, you know, there's a lot of people saying the title race is already over. It's premature to say that, but my word, they've started well and the numbers are very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you'd almost expect them to get better as well as the season goes on. I mean, we talked a lot at the start of the season about having to learn how to use Haaland to his full potential. And, you know, even the first 4 or 5 weeks, you had Foden getting subbed early because he wasn't passing to him and all that. I mean, you know, they've clearly learned how to play with him, but we're only, you know, they've only played 7 or 8 games in the Premier League. You've got to think that's going to click even more and get even better. So they're just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, Liverpool in second is interesting, 1.94. Arsenal in third and Spurs in fourth. I mean, that could very well be the top four this season based on kind of what we've seen so far. But I mean, Liverpool have struggled a bit, but they're not really struggling to create chances. And you've got to think now with Thiago back, they're going to start scoring more goals.
You expect them to find another gear, don't you? And that's why it's interesting at the moment that with the wild cards having been played in this week and last, people have moved away from the Liverpool assets with game week, with the fixtures and with the form. We're looking at Salah later on, I think. And it is interesting to look at where Liverpool were this time last season. There's not a massive difference in terms of, I think when Salah, I think after 6 matches, after 540 minutes, this season, Liverpool scored 15 goals. And after 540 minutes for Salah last season, they'd scored 15 goals as well. And the season before that, 15 goals. So in terms of Salah's presence in that team, his output should be better than it is, really. It has been for the last 2 seasons. So we'll look at Salah later on. He definitely has struggled. I think it's because we're going off Liverpool, not because necessarily that we think their form's going to continue. It's because Trent and Salah as FBL assets have kind of lagged behind City so much, and there are options elsewhere now that we've been driven to kind of reconsider it, especially with like Son and Kane being factors again and Arsenal kicking on as well. So it's not just City and Liverpool dominating now. Arsenal are playing their part and Spurs are kind of maintaining the levels to some extent we saw last season. So although City are well out in front, the chasing pack is a little bit closer, isn't it, between Liverpool, Arsenal and Spurs in terms of our feelings towards their fantasy assets. It's levelled out.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe that Liverpool Bournemouth 9-0 was this season. That feels like ages ago.
Yeah. But
I wonder how much that's kind of inflated things. I mean, Leeds in fifth is different to how we kind of predicted that to go under Marsh. We thought they'd be better defensively, but a kind of sacrifice of their attacking play, but they'll be happy with that. I mean, there's quite a drop off as well from fifth in Leeds down to Newcastle in sixth, 1.62 to 1.46 non-penalty per 90. But talk about drop off. I mean, look at Bournemouth, 0.47 right down the bottom. Now, there's a lot of talk about a certain Dominic Solanke.
I know. This
season. It's very hard to score when you don't get many, when you're getting basically a chance every other game. Or XG every other game. What do you make of Solanke?
Well, yeah, when we look at some data with him, I think we've got a table on that later, but you've got to take this table in because look where Bournemouth are. And yes, okay, they've not as have the easiest of starts necessarily, but I don't expect Bournemouth to be a strong attacking side and that to improve markedly at all. The fixtures are swinging their way. They're top of the ticker, right? So that means that this is probably the period of the season where we'd expect Solanke to be a factor if he's ever going to be a factor. Unless, obviously, they're fighting relegation at the end and then sometimes form goes out the window, fixtures goes out the window and teams fighting for their lives can get results out of nothing. But this period, it goes Brentford, Leicester, both home games, Fulham away, Southampton at home. So 3 of the next 4 are at home against teams that, you know, they'll be looking at that and thinking we need to get points against these teams. Brentford at home, Leicester at home and Southampton at home. And even Fulham away, they think they can probably get something there. So there's no question that Bournemouth will be looking at this next set of fixtures and thinking this is a crucial period for us. If we are going to survive this season, we need to come out of this run with some points, with probably 9 to 10 points between now and game week 16. And that's what we care about, because after 16, we can change our teams. Would I go Solanke? Last season, in this scenario, I think I'd be all over Solanke like a bad suit.
Yeah.
This season, when we've got Mitrovic, Tony, Isak, and you've got Haaland, who automatically almost fills one spot up front, I think it's difficult to find a place for Solanke, even with these fixtures. Given the data on that previous screen, we saw Bournemouth are so far adrift of every other team in terms of their attacking output so far. And although these fixtures are the best run of fixtures they've got, they are a team that aren't going to like throw caution to the wind and attack these teams. They're going to be pragmatic in their approach, even to these fixtures, I would have thought. So I don't see Solanke coming out of this run between 9 and 16 with more than 3 or 4 goals at most. And I would back Tony, Mitrovic and Isak, depending on when he's returned, to match or better that. So for me, Solanke's a no, but you know, this time last season, it would have been a yes because the options weren't there, were they?
Yeah, I mean, the argument I'm seeing from quite a few, and Slippers included, is that he's going 5 in midfield, for example, and wants a player for game week 12 when City and Arsenal got the game, and needs that bench to be decent, and Bournemouth have got Southampton at home in that fixture. So, you know, for example, Zaha is someone who's really popular. Palace are second on the fixture ticker. Mm. Well, maybe you go for Zaha over one of the strikers you've mentioned, Tony, Isak, and then you have Solanke in as that kind of enabler type. I mean, that means that you're spending quite a lot of money on a bench option most weeks. It also means that you might dodge like a couple of Solanke's goals as well, if you think he's going to score over this period. And I think the forward options that you've talked about are all better. I mean, I want to, at the moment, I mean, historically, it's the forwards that do the best in FPL. And when we've got options to choose, I don't know why we wouldn't make sure we've got the best three options that we can get. And when I've got Kane, Mitrovic, and Haaland, and like, why would I?
Well, you're not.
Break that up for Solanke.
You're not going to sell Mitrovic, and I've got Tony, Haaland, and Mitrovic, and so Solanke doesn't better any of those for me. I guess it's a money thing, right? If he enables you to get a stronger midfield option and an upgrade there, but for me, Tony and Mitrovic are the two that look strongest to supplement either Kane or Haaland. And obviously, if you're going both Kane and Haaland, you've only got one slot. It's got to be Mitrovic, given the run he's got. Mitrovic might be carrying an injury, right? We saw that he's hobbling. There's some footage of him hobbling after the game. But he's made of steel, right?
He's playing Newcastle next. He's
playing in that game. He only needs his head anyway. It doesn't matter if his feet don't work. So I think it's harsh on Solanke, because I think in these circumstances, with those fixtures, he is a worthwhile punt. But this season, with the options we've got, I think it's a struggle to justify moving to him, unless you're really seeking out a differential. But I don't think he's going to be explosive. Like, I think he will deliver okay over this period, but he's not going to get a couple of hat-tricks, is he? Because Bournemouth aren't that team. They're not going to throw caution to the wind over this period. The other thing is, Gary O'Neill is temporary boss. We don't even know who the manager is yet. So a manager could come in and change everything. The system could change. Kiefer Moore is the focal point of that attack, if anything. So Solanke could even end up playing behind him in a different kind of role. So there's a lot of things up in the air at Bournemouth at the moment. So you're buying into a team that's uncertain and are bottom of the attacking data. Yes, they've got good fixtures, but with the options we've got elsewhere, it's a no for me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I would never tell anyone to not buy or buy someone. And I think it is really interesting, because the fact Bournemouth are top of the fixture ticker with 3 home games in the next 4 is quite intriguing. It's just, you look at the attacking data and, you know, if they're only going to get an XG every other game, you've really got to doubt how many goals they're going to score, even against some of the worst sides. But yeah, we'll see. If you want to go for him and you can use that money elsewhere, and you can grab a Zaha or a James or upgrade, 4 million defenders to Trippier or whatever.
It's what you can do with the money. As I've said before, in the argument with Salah and Son, it's never about just those two players. It's about what does that extra, what that extra 0.5, 0.9, 1 million, whatever that extra is, what does that get you? That has to come into the argument as well. But if it's a straight, do I prefer Mitrovic, Tony to Solanke over this one? Yes, I do. Yeah.
Absolutely. Defence, let's take a look at some of these. City top, again, by quite a margin. Arsenal next in second. West Ham, interestingly, in third. The stats indicate they were pretty unlucky to lose that game against Everton. They lost 1-0. They had a better XG. But Moyes is in a bit of trouble, isn't he? What, do you reckon he can come out of this?
Don't know what's going on, really. I don't know what has broken the formula that he had. They look like such a well-balanced team with a good first 11 that could be a top six first 11, right? That's what I thought they would become. I thought they'd kick on further this season. And you know, I think obviously the European campaign's going to interrupt their progress because it is arduous, and they've brought in new players that haven't really settled. Maybe they've done more harm than good bringing in new faces, as Forrest have found to their cost as well. It isn't always a positive.
Oh, you made some signings, have you? I didn't realise.
Yeah, I made a few. I think West Ham have got quality that will eventually come to the fore and they'll break out of this. It is interesting that defensively they've kicked on. I haven't seen any changes tactically that would lead them to that. I can only think maybe it's the fixtures they've had that have promoted their defensive data, and it will normalise over time, but maybe not. Maybe West Ham are now a top six side defensively, and we need to be looking at their players. You know, Emerson's obviously, if he starts at wing back, if they play a back three, then he's a great option. But if they chop and change, which I expect them to do, then, you know, there's not really a nailed on figure that you would go for in that West Ham defence. Not a go-to option, is there? So Creswell when they're scoring goals, maybe. But
yeah, I mean, I've got Emerson. I think he's decent if they do go back to a back three with wing backs. I think he's he's an absolute standout. But obviously didn't play there in the last game, and Creswell was back, and it was a bit annoying. Some of the teams I want to mention on this list, though, I mean, you would expect Leicester, having conceded 22 goals, which is the most in the league, to be bottom. They're not. It's Palace, who are still bottom, which is surprising for a lot of different reasons, I think. They're obviously now second on the ticker. And the defence, we don't really consider because they're not really the attacking options. There's no Van Aanholt these days or exciting attacking options. But it is interesting that they're so low down because you associate a Vieira side with, you know, being pretty...
Yeah, but they've had tough fixtures, haven't they?
They have.
And they had the 10 men at Anfield as well, which skewed the numbers a bit. So I think, like West Ham at the top, I'd expect that to normalise out and they'll make their way up to mid-table soon. I would have thought. Because I don't think anything's changed tactically there. And actually, people are looking at Gaeta and players like that, aren't they, for this run? And I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, the goalkeeper will always get save points, even if they are questionable defensively. I still think there's a problem on set plays, though. I still think not Leicester proportions, but they're still vulnerable there. So I personally not looking at the Crystal Palace defence, but I don't think it's the worst defence in the league. That data says it is, but it's not. It's gonna level out, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Leicester are an interesting one because I thought Leicester actually played really well in the first 40 minutes against Spurs. I thought they were well in the game. They looked sharp, but they just crumble, don't they? They're just a team now where as soon as things start going against them, they look like they could concede absolute buckets. And I don't know if you saw the Sidemen charity match with Cal the Dragon.
I did, the goalkeeping there. Yeah.
Very much like Danny Ward.
Yeah.
In the sense that he couldn't save anything. I mean, they have to make a change, I think, really, at a goalkeeper. They can't.
I can't.
It's going to be Everson in soon, surely.
Surely against Forest, he's going to make that change. I mean, normally when, like Travers for Bournemouth, when they lost 9-0 at Anfield, Travers made way and Nico came in. And I think that surely that will happen for Leicester. He can't justify picking Ward any longer, can he? Given that they've conceded 5 and then 6, and if Forest is a crucial game where he's potentially his job's on the line, you'd
both
expect
jobs.
Everson. Yeah, yeah. Don't want to say that, but yeah, possibly. I think Rodgers is more in danger, but yeah, it's going to be a crazy game on Monday because you look at those two defences and they're both very similar. Like, as soon as Forest have scored first in a lot of games this season, but as soon as we concede one, we crumble, right? So the first goal on Monday night is going to be really, really crucial. Leicester, you pick players against them at the moment. We talk about picking Madison, but you pick players, attacking players against them for sure, don't you?
Yep. Well, yeah, you have to. They're our team to crumble. I mean, I still think attacking-wise, they're not that high up in the list, but I think Madison is the standout. There's probably not any other attackers I go for, but I still am backing them to score some goals no matter who's in charge. But yeah, defensively, it's completely different.
Do you think there's a spirit issue? Do you think that the problems off the pitch are showing on the pitch? Do you think like the discontent and the uncertainty of Rodgers' future and the players that wanted to leave and some left and some didn't, do you think that is what the problem is? I mean, or do you think it's just really, lack of talent?
It's really tough. I mean, I definitely don't think it's lack of talent. I think they've got a squad that should be challenging for top six, top six to eight. I think, you know, they managed to keep hold of Tielemans. Okay, Fofana went, but, you know, with Maddison, with Vardy, with Daka, you know, they've got a good team. Justin, I really rate. I mean, losing Schmeichel was absolutely huge. And the fact they didn't bring in a proper replacement for him was an issue. But I expected them to do okay this season. And I guess they're just a team where, you know, when things start going a bit badly, they don't really know how to deal with it. And,
yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Cooper has said for Forest, like, the reason why when we concede the first goal, we crumble is we don't yet have that team spirit that we had last season because it's all new players. Leicester should still have that team spirit because they haven't had that much change. They've lost some key men, but the players that are there know each other and should be fighting for each other, but they're not. There's something's wrong. Something's wrong. Yeah. Where's that spirit gone? It shouldn't be lost. Rodgers should still have that, but he hasn't. And so something inherently is wrong there, right? So,
yeah. I mean, it's interesting as well. I mean, remember when Ranieri was there, won the league, and then the season after, they just completely fell apart as well. Mm. And they didn't seem to have that same desire to press and to attack and to do all the things that did so well. And couldn't really understand where that had gone. But if the hunger isn't there and they are willing these moves and wanting to move on and, you know, the investment isn't coming, then I guess that can play out of the mind. But it is a strange one. Just one other thing I want to mention here is Bournemouth in 11th. Even though they conceded 9 goals to Liverpool, they're not, you know, rock bottom. Their defensive numbers don't indicate they're the whipping boys. They're ahead of Chelsea, United. Not ahead of United. They're ahead of, like, Chelsea, Everton, for example, who have been okay defensive. Villa, who Gerrard has set Villa up, like, since he's been there, to be quite a good defensive side. But Bournemouth are ahead of all those as well. Do you think we're wrong to be targeting Bournemouth as a whipping boy? Or...
No,
is this bubble going to burst?
I think they're going to concede goals in games, but they're not going to get routed. They're not a Leicester or Forest. They're not going to collapse in games. I think that, you know, it links back to what we said about Solanke. They're going to be pragmatic in their approach. That means they're not going to take risks, even with the fixtures they got. They're going to go into this run, going, we only need to win 1-0. Performance doesn't matter. We don't need to score 4 or 5 goals. We need to win 1-0. That will probably be their approach. It's hard for me to speculate because I don't know Gary O'Neill as a manager. I did know, I did know that the previous managers, I did know that, you know, you had more data to go on with them and you knew exactly how they were going to set up, how they were going to approach games. Parker was a defensively minded manager. So with O'Neill, maybe there's going to be a bit more about them and we'll see this data change, but it's not even sure that O'Neill's permanent yet. So we'll have to see.
Yep. Excellent. Keepers. Let's have a look at some player data. Keepers is a really interesting one at the moment because Pope is kind of the standout on this list. Points per 90, highest. Expected goal prevented. I think he's either the first or second highest. Third. Pickford is the best, and then Alisson, and then Pope. But he's doing all the things. He's made like the most saves. He's made the most recoveries. I think he's doing everything. But then a lot of people have got Trippier. So do you really want that double up? I mean, we saw it against Bournemouth. I mean, that is like a nailed on clean sheet, right, against Bournemouth. And they still managed to concede. And that's the kind of danger when you go for this kind of double up. If you don't go for Pope, I find it really hard to know who to go for. There's no keepers that I love at the moment.
I feel the same. I mean, like, as I said, Gaeta's getting some traffic. I've got Raya. And to be honest, like, because there's no standout, I'm just going to probably settle on that because I've got other transfers I want to make. A few weeks back, I was going to move to Henderson, but with Forest capitulation, that's a no-go at the moment. I still think Henderson could emerge as the best 4-5, but at the moment, Raya's as good as anybody, isn't he? 4-5, Brentford, you know, they're going to concede goals, but also he's going to make saves. He's got a good amount of saves on this chart. And he's in the, you know, in terms of BPS per 90, he's what, second? Yeah, he's second to Pope. So Ray is a good option for me. And you're right, because of Trippier, I've got Trippier and I don't want to double up on Newcastle because I don't yet trust them as an elite defence by any means. They're a much improved team under Howe. We saw it last season. But Pope, didn't have a good international break, you know, and you've got to think with goalkeepers mentally, how's that going to affect him? You made that error in the Germany game, and I don't know. I'm not spending 5.2 on Pope when I've got Trippier now. No way.
It's really interesting with Pope, isn't it? Because he didn't look like a international goalkeeper in those games, but then you look at these stats and you think he has been, well, arguably the best goalkeeper in the league so far. But I think Pickford, with those performances, Pickford's just nailed his spot now for the World Cup under Southgate. So yeah, fair play to him. I mean, I've got Henderson, like, he's not great. You're conceding loads of goals, but I kind of don't really care. There's no obvious switch.
No, exactly.
I think I probably would go for Raya if I had the choice, but yeah, there's not much in it.
That's your lot for part one of episode 83 of FBL Black Box. In part two, we'll look at the defenders, midfielders and forwards data. We'll look at a potential wildcard squad for game week 9 and onwards. And we'll look at our predictions and lineups ahead of the weekend.
Podcast Network.